All righty, here we go. Limitless Mindset, episode number 15. Here we go. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Man, we got a good one today. So we have complete, we're starting our second section of the five steps to manifesting. Step number two, which is taking bold action towards your goal. So if you haven't seen episode one, you should go back and watch that one. Although I'm telling you that you probably won't do that. Watch this one, whatever, and then go back. Once you get curious, go watch episode one so you can figure out, go watch episode 14, which is step one in the five steps of manifesting your goal. Without further ado, if you are new here, my name is Logan Manzanares. I'm a business owner, I'm a fitness professional, transformed well over 2,000 people's lives through this little thing we call health and fitness. I'm a real estate investor, husband, and father, and one of the most grateful people on this planet. And today we got a good one, taking bold action. One of my favorite things to do. Got some good stories about this. Before we dive into taking bold action, I got a couple awesome fellows on here who are also excited about taking bold action as well. And so we got John and Juan and Tim on here today. So I'll let them introduce themselves individually, but this is going to be a good one. So John, if you don't mind introducing yourself to the friendly people out there.
By all means. So my name is John Bodnar, and I am a coach at BSB Wealthy Body Coaching. And my purpose in life is to show people how it's possible to have personal power and become the best version of yourself. And in doing so by uncovering limiting beliefs, learning how to create a healthy routine, not just physically, but mentally as well.
Yes, sir. Glad to have you on here today, Mr. John Bodnar. And Tim, who are you, my friend?
What's going on, guys? My name is Coach Tim. I'm here with BSB Wealthy Body Coaching. I'm a self-admitted meathead. I love picking up heavy things and setting it back down. But honestly, my passion, the purpose that I honestly believe I was put here on earth to do was to help people manifest, not to use that word or overuse that word, but to manifest the greatness within themselves, meaning the strongest version of themselves. So that's honestly what I'm here for. And it's what I love doing. So hopefully you guys get some awesome value out of this, because I know all of us do. We get awesome value out of this.
Heck yes. All right. And Mr. Juan Barrio, who are you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm Juan. I'm also a coach here at Wealthy Body Coaching. I'm health, fitness, and taking personal responsibility for where I'm at today and where I want to go has set me free. So I'm here to share that freedom with others and just trying to connect with new people and be inspired and continue to inspire.
Yes, sir. Let's go, fellas. Let's get inspired here to do episode number 15. Step number two, take bold action towards your goal. So let's recap what step one was, which was clearly define your goal. So in order to take bold action towards something, you must know where you're going. So again, I highly encourage you, if you haven't seen episode 14 or step number one, go back and watch that so you actually can know what you're fighting for. Because when you have a good idea what you're fighting for, taking the bold action, it's going to become really easy to find out what that thing is. So you must set your intention, and then you must give everything you have to make it a reality, right? It's not good enough just to set a goal. You must also create a plan. Crazy, right? And you must detail precisely what you plan on doing to achieve your goal, set benchmarks to track your progress. Tim talked about this a lot, I believe it was last week, but this is actually really cool. And actually, I think it's important worth noting is that people are like, yeah, I really want to lose 30 pounds. And they focus on 30 pounds. Like, okay, if I just think about losing 30 pounds every single day, I will reach losing 30 pounds. Well, number one, awesome that you actually have a goal. That's important. But if you focus on just losing 30 pounds, you're not gonna lose 30 pounds, because what is your plan to lose 30 pounds? Is it that you're going to think the weight off? Is it that you're going to wish it off? Is it that you're going to drink rum and cokes to get the weight off? Like, what is your plan, right? And so ultimately, like, you must have a plan in order to get there, right? Like, maybe exercising, maybe some sort of nutrition, maybe some sort of mindset, maybe some coaching, right? But have a plan. And the truth of the matter is, like, so, you know, obviously we have a coaching program where we all create awesome customized plans for people. And here's what I will tell you. Just having a freaking plan is so much better than having no plan at all. Like, it doesn't even matter what the plan is. It really doesn't. Like, having a plan will put you 90% ahead of most people. Now, if you want to get that last 10%, I would have a good plan, a customized plan, a plan that actually works for you, something you can see yourself doing, by all means, maybe something that these three guys can talk to you about. But ultimately, like, just having a plan is definitely the first step. So without further ado, John, let's start on this one. Tell me, when you see the slide, what is the first thing that pops in your mind?
Actually, with myself, I've had goals for a long time. Like I've had goals to be jacked, actually ripped is what I would actually go with. Like, I want to be ripped or I want to be a millionaire. But up until I started going through actual, limitless mindset, I had no plan. And so I was not having success at the time either. Like physically I was getting close, but I wasn't really on this path that was going to get me where I wanted to be. And certainly financially, it was nowhere near on the right path. And so I really just can't stress enough how important it is to actually have a plan. And in order for it to be a good plan, like it just needs to be realistic and attainable and actually have some intentional thought behind it. Because if you just sit down and say like, oh, okay, well, if I want to make $1 million in 10 years, I got to make $100,000 a year. Great. There's my plan. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about every little step in between and narrowing it down so that you basically end up with a list of, hey, what can I do every single day that I know will eventually get me to where I want to be? That's what a real plan looks like, is the daily actions that you can easily do every single day.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And Tim, I want you to follow it up because I think I can't remember if it was last week or week before, but you had a really good idea of benchmarks and plans. So if you want to just do that again.
For sure. Yeah. So before I say that, and I'm not sure who told me this or where this quote came from, but a goal without a plan is nothing more than a dream.
Yeah.
Right. So like, this is kind of like my favorite part, right? We have like the two camps. We have our, I don't want to call it woo-woo, but kind of the etherical side of like visualization, imagine yourself at the end point. Like that stuff is all important. But then we have the tactical, the X's and O's, which is this stuff we're talking about today. So when we talk about goals, the way I like to break it up is in an acronym. We call them SMART goals. So they need to be specific. They need to be measurable. They need to be attainable, realistic, and they need to be time sensitive. And so what we're talking about here is more of that measurable facet of the goal setting, right? So another cliche or another adage is what gets measured gets managed. So if we don't measure things, it's really, really hard to make any adaptations to the plan or make any adjustments. And that's assuming we have a plan at all, right? Like if we have a goal to lose 30 pounds using Logan's example, and my goal is to eat better. Okay, well, how do we measure better? Like what are we actually measuring? Now, if we get specific, and this is what John Juan and myself do with our clients, is we give them specific targets to shoot for every single day. So like, okay, if John was my client, like, boom, I want you to hit 180 grams of protein per day. And we're going to do that over six meals. So that's going to come out to what, 30 grams of protein per meal, right? So now you have targets that are not just for the day. They have targets specifically for each individual meal. And all you have to do, John, is just execute on that plan. And we know if it doesn't work, we can make minor adjustments. Like when we think about science, because all this is very scientific, the objective is to control the amount of variables that we're playing with, right? So keep everything consistent. And then if we can make a small adjustment to one variable, we can suss out whether or not that was a positive adjustment or a negative adjustment, right? So if John, like I'm gonna use Kari as an example, because, and I hope we can talk about like actual people in here, yeah. But she was on one of our
coaching calls. Actually have clients. Okay, we can talk about actual clients.
Yeah, they exist. So Kari was on one of the coaching calls last night, and she was saying that one of her biggest wins was that she had a break in her plateau. She had been plateaued for like 2 weeks. The scale hadn't moved. And I was like, okay, so tell me, what did you do? What did you do to break that plateau? And she's like, well, John just dropped my calories a little bit. He dropped my protein a little bit. He dropped my calories. It wasn't that much. And I just executed on everything he told me to do. And I started losing weight again. So that would be an example of, if she wasn't tracking, if she wasn't measuring what she was doing, John would have no idea how to adjust her plan to make sure she kept moving in the right direction. So that's an example of measurable, right? Like we need to have, these things need to be trackable. If we can track them, then we can make adjustments and make sure that we're hitting the same, or sorry, make sure that we're moving in the right direction. All the client has to do, all the person has to do, all I have to do is execute on the plan that's set out in front of me.
Wait, so John, you just didn't help just eat better? Eat healthier, try harder.
No, that's exactly what I told her, and then I just snuck the plan in.
It's okay. Juan, tell me, what are some of the things that we're talking about a lot about measuring, right? So what are some of the things you like to measure for yourself and even for your clients? Like what are some of like the metrics you like to have people track? Obviously, we talked a little bit about macros, right? But what are some other things that you like to have people track as well?
Yeah, no. So we're going to keep track of what they're eating. obviously macros is one thing, but exactly what they're eating. And then on top of that, you know, scale weight, not to be obsessive with the weight, but just use it as information. So mm-hmm. we can look at what's happening over the long term, what kind of trends we're noticing. And also it's helpful to use that information to in creating averages instead of just looking at one day where maybe you woke up and you're a little heavier than you were the day before. Well, like, let's look at the average and we'll take that average and really focus on that. So just the more information that we have, the more that we're able to analyze and come up with an accurate depiction of where we're at. And on top of that, like, I mean, even sleep is a good thing to track, figure out how much sleep you're getting, figuring out if maybe that's an area that you can improve on. But like I said, the more information, the better. So anything that we can track in relation to our goals is essentially something that can benefit us.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to say, like, obviously weight is a big one, especially when it comes to any body composition, because ultimately, like, your weight is going to have to change on some level. And it's like, the thing that I wanted in there that was fire is that when you track data over a period of time, you're able to come to averages rather than day to day, right? Like, you know what? I didn't poop today, and all of a sudden I was up a pound and a half. Gosh darn it. I ate to my plan, but I went up in weight. Why was that? Well, it's because you didn't actually poop. Yeah, which is fine, right? Like, maybe you don't poop every day. Maybe you're an everyday pooper. Maybe you're once every 3 or 4 days pooper. Like, ultimately, like, poop is going to affect how you show up on the scale, right? And there's obviously other things than poop, but poop is the easiest one. And to make a long story short, when I was asking for things that you track one, I was really hoping you put down poop, but you didn't. So I'm gonna set by that. Anyway,
you need to track your shit.
Yeah, you need to track your shit. It's fire. I love that. All right, and so when we're taking bold action towards our goals, this is cool. So this is straight from the Chris Krohn Limitless book. He's like, your goals are in stone, but your plan's in sand, right? Which basically means that your plan must be adaptable. So you must know what you're going for, but like how you get there is going to change, plain and simple, right? And that's why it's so important to just have a freaking plan, because when you have a plan, at least you know where you're going to go. That plan is going to change, right? And here's the crazy part is that by definition, when you set to do something you haven't done before, let's say like lose 30 pounds, like become a millionaire, like, you know, bench 500 for 8 on incline press, Tim. By definition, you've never done it before. So you gotta have a plan to get there, but you're gonna encounter some things that you didn't realize are gonna come up along the way. And so you must be adaptable in order to do that, right? So Tim, I should start with you on this one. Tell me, like, what's a really good example or the first like story that comes to your mind when you think about goals in snow and plans in sand for you?
So I have several. So I've competed, gosh, this will be like my eighth bodybuilding competition. And so the goal is always to go up on stage looking like you have no skin, right? Like literally all the body fat is gone. Every muscle is striated, like unhealthily lean, right? But that's a goal. That's the goal in sand, or sorry, that's a goal in stone. But the plan, every single prep has been completely different. And it's because, and this is not to toot our own horn, but this is honestly the beauty and the value of coaching is having someone with experience, knowing how to adjust that plan based off of their experience and the obstacles that you're going to run into. So for instance, the last prep I did, this was the Excalibur in 2019. I came into the prep very over fat, I'll say, for a bodybuilder. So I was probably right around 15, 16% body fat. I was sitting about 252 pounds in the off season. And my coach thought, okay, it's going to take you about 16 weeks to get ready. Well, it turned out it took me 24. I actually took 24 and I got all the way down to eating roughly 1400 calories per day to get ready. And I was doing at that time about an hour and a half to 2 hours of cardio on top of my training. So all these were variables that he would throw in week to week based off of how my body was responding in real time to the process. So on paper, if you type in Tim, well, you won't type in Tim Cruz on Google, but someone with my height, my weight, and my body fat percentage, it's going to spit out like a BMR of roughly 3,200 calories per day for maintenance, right? And if we just do a simple adjustment for calories, about 500 calorie deficit, that'd bring you down to right out 2,700 calories. It should put you in a deficit, right? You should be able to lose body fat at 2,700 calories. Well, that was not the case with me. We kept having to drop calories, raise expenditure, drop calories. We did that over and over and over again until we got all the way down to 1400, which by all measures was actually, science would tell you that's not how it should have went. But my coach, his experience, his eye, everything that he had learned up until that point, that was the art of it, is like, he literally was able to look at me like, no, we need to do more. We need to do this. We need to do that. And then as we got about 2 weeks out from the show, I hit a gnarly plateau, meaning I stopped losing body fat. I stopped losing weight. My stress probably was going through the roof because it's crunch time. And intuitively, he doubled my carbohydrate intake. He brought me up to about 2000 calories and I started losing weight again, which again, science would tell you that shouldn't work, right? That shouldn't work. But he adjusted the plan. He wasn't married to the plan. We were just married to the goal, is what I'm trying to get at with all of this. So if you have a plan, you have a goal, that goal is cemented in stone. We're going to freaking do it. The plan needs to be adjustable because real life happens and we need to be able to adjust. Every single person is an individual. We have lives, we have experiences. We also have different responses to nutrition. So like, you need to be able to be adaptable to that. And that's honestly the value and the beauty of coaching, is someone like us can look at you and be able to make those adjustments and save you all of that guesswork of figuring out on your own.
Yeah. And I did Google you, Tim Cruz, and you are very handsome. You are bald. You have glasses and you are a pastor. So just if you think about that. So you can.
Super close.
When I become a pastor and get glasses.
Hey, 2 out of 4 and down, man.
Yeah. Juan, tell me, what are your, like give me an example when you think about this idea of being adaptable and having to adjust your plan, what's the first memory or thought that comes up for you?
Honestly, some of the biggest changes even have happened more recently. And I say that because when I was younger, or, you know, starting to have goals for life or whatever it was, I would make the goal and then I would try to come up with a plan that I knew would work. And then when I realized how much work this plan was going to take and that, you know, I might not succeed, then I just wouldn't take action. Mm-hmm. And I didn't believe in the plan. It wasn't in my eyes perfect. So instead of getting started and seeing where it took me, I took no action at all. And so I did that for a long time. And then I realized, like I said, more recently, and it was more in like the area of like finances. Like, we want to buy a home, right? We don't, you know, I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it, but I know I'm going to do it. I have a plan on how I'm going to do it, and I'm started on that plan. I don't know if that's going to be the plan that gets me there, but I know that taking action and going in the right direction is ultimately going to get me closer than taking no action at all. And then I'm always open and looking for new ways to improve the plan, or, you know, different ideas. Maybe I hit a roadblock. I don't care because I already decided that I'm going to do it. So I think the first step for me was learning to just decide on what I want to happen, obviously, and then making a plan, taking action, and not being afraid for that plan to come to a halt and switch the plan a little bit. So, yeah, I think the big thing is don't be scared to commit to a plan, but don't be like Tim had said, don't be married to the plan. Be ready to switch it up. Be ready to do whatever it takes to reach your goal, because your goal ultimately should be that important too.
And something said right there is like, well, so this is say take bold action. It doesn't say take big jumps. It just says take bold action. So a bold action could just be like one step, right? It could just be like, oh, I'm going to go see what my credit score is to get a house, for example. Oh, I'm going to go get a gym membership, right? Or I'm going to go reach out to a personal trainer. Like these would be like small steps, but those are bold actions. I'm going to get on a phone call with a coach. I just want to like learn what he has to offer. Like, that's a bold action. Right? It doesn't mean like, I'm going to not eat for 30 days. I mean, that is a bold action. Not recommended, but from a level of scale, like any action towards your goal is a bold action. I think that needs to be really clear. I think that's what Juan, that's what I interpreted from what Juan said. Is just like it doesn't matter the how, just like take one step, get moving in the right direction. That is a bold action.
I want to add to that too, Logan.
Yeah, go for it.
On top of that, like you said, just like taking bold action, like, and celebrating that action, like honestly, like being proud of yourself for taking that step, for no matter how little you think the step is, like, mm-hmm. quit minimizing it, like celebrate it, you know, if anything, magnify it, and then take the next step. But
yeah, success without fulfillment is a failure. Like, anytime you take a step forward, be fulfilled by it. Yes, I did something different today, right? And if you can't get excited about the little things you do every single day, but you're going to get upset about the things you don't do, that means you're going to lose regardless. So that means no matter what you did, if you took a step forward, you're mad at yourself. If you didn't take a step forward, you're mad at yourself. And then no matter what, you're mad at yourself. That sounds stupid. Don't be stupid. Be happy, right? Do something positive. John, let's go.
Yeah. So I was actually feeling pretty stupid about a week ago, right? Not feeling stupid. I was being stupid about a week ago with my nutrition. So I've been on a cut. I'm on my seventh week now.
Too many thick crunch
and bars. Well, that was, it fit into the day. It was fine. My strategy was, my plan was like, okay, I have my macros. That was easy for, like, just figure that out. Those are my macros. Make my thing. And so what I would do is I would just make a bunch of food for the entire day and put all of my food for one day in a tub. You guys have seen it. It's my little, like, my Christmas cookie tub thing. And that was working really well for 6 weeks. I was like, yeah, I just eat it as I go throughout the day. It's like, discipline's good. I don't just like chow it all down. And then I started to finish it by 2 o'clock. And I was like, oh no, this is not good. Because now I have to go, like, what would that be? 16, 17, 18 hours without any food, which I don't want to do that. And so, but I just kept doing it. I just kept doing the same thing over and over again. And I'd get mad about it. I would overeat. I had chocolate syrup in my fridge. I was like, I just need something. I'll put a tablespoon in there and eat it. And it's like, there's something wrong, but it took me a while to figure it out because I started getting really mad at myself and being dumb. Cause I was like, this works. Why isn't it working now? I'm going to keep doing it. And now what I do is, which I don't actually recommend, I'm not even doing any meal prep. I get to work from home. So I've just been making like small meals throughout the day when I'm actually like dying. And that's working really, really well. So I had to change the plan. I'm still married to my goal of continuing my cut. I thought about giving up on it, but instead I changed the plan. I made it sandy and got over myself basically. So adapt, to be clear, it's necessary.
When you say meal prep, different than food prep, like if the food is already prepared, you just don't have it actually inside a container in a bowl, correct?
Correct. So yeah. So I am meal planning, but my food is not prepared. I am cooking it fresh for every meal instead. But it takes like a couple of seconds, which is why I don't recommend it, because not everyone has that luxury.
Got it. So you have the food, you just don't have it actually cooked, which therefore is keeping you from just grazing all day, essentially. Like a cow.
Exactly.
And then looking like a cow.
Or eating half of my day in one sitting. Yeah.
Perfect. Cool. All right. So as we continue with this idea of being flexible, right? And having the plan be adaptable, your plan must do so as well. And you must be persistent, buoyant, and of course flexible. So like you're gonna get knocked down. You're gonna have things that go differently than you thought. And you must get back up. Here's the key: learn the right lessons along the way. Don't get bitter, but get better. Get better, not bitter. Bitty butter, bitter butter, but you found the butter bitter, right? And it's not a straight path. You'll need to course correct constantly, right? I think this is one of the most important things that that is like really hit home for me lately. And this was actually a Leila Hormozi quote, or I heard it from her. But it's understanding that, like, the struggle, like what John just said, the struggle of like staying to your meal plan is actually never going to go away. These feelings of doubts, insecurities, and feelings of like maybe not feeling good, like those things don't go away, right? These feelings of like you making it, or you being fit enough or strong enough or wealthy enough, like those don't go away. Never, ever will they go away, right? So just understand that those feelings are always going to be, like, they're always going to come. But the difference is that when you know that they're going to come, you can expect them, you have a plan for them. What can you do when you have a plan? For when you start to feel those feelings of doubts, insecurities, fears, and you have a plan, what then can you guys do?
Well, you can lean on the plan. You need to.
Yeah. Well, you need a plan. You're like, okay, when I start to feel this thing, I do this thing, and I know that by doing this thing, I get rid of this feeling.
Yeah.
Right? So it's expecting it. And I think so many times people have false expectations that they think that, you know, after doing something for a certain period of time, 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years, that it should, like, they should just like not have to deal with it, right? And now like ultimately you're always gonna have to continue to like course correct no matter what, continue to move and continue to adjust, because ultimately, like, the bigger your goals are, the longer it's gonna take to get there. And if you have huge goals, it's gonna take you longer than 3 weeks, it's gonna take you longer than 3 months, might take you longer than 3 years depending on how big your goals are, right? And so just understand that you must know where you want to go, but you must be fluid, flexible, and be able to adjust the plan as necessary. And again, learn the right lessons along the way. This is super important because most people, they view when things don't go their way as a failure. They view it as, they take it personal. They take it as like, maybe they're not set out for it. But if you can just say, what lesson I need to learn here? What did I didn't know that I know now that can help me move towards this goal in the future? And we're able to look at it from a logical point of view, then it becomes, well, actually just becomes just a matter of time before you actually hit your dang goal, right? As long as your goal hasn't been done before, it's been done before. Okay, then boom, then it can be done. That's it, plain and simple. So unless your goal is to run a 3-minute mile, which we've told stories on here about running the 4-minute mile, which obviously can be done, but unless your goal is to do something that's never been done before, well, it can be done. So just always believe that if somebody else did it, if John did it, if Tim did it, if Juan did it, if I did it, then it can be done. You can do it as well, right? So Juan, tell me, where was a time where you were super persistent and you were really flexible in something that you were going after?
Yeah. Let's see. I think the biggest one was probably the thing I'm most proud of myself for was last year. Tim, I never did step on stage, but I did have a plan to do so. And I was super persistent with my diet. I was taking my cooler everywhere. I would take trips to Billings and have all my meals planned. I would take 3-day trips to Idaho, and I would take literally a cooler full of food with me that I would have at the hotel that I would just have to heat up in the microwave. I found ways to go do things with family. We would go out on the boat and I'd be eating my meals cold. Obviously there's no way to heat it up, but I was super persistent. As far as being flexible, I was flexible with my time. So like I could have easily been like, no, I have to eat at this time, I can't go. But I found ways to make sure that I had what I needed with me to stay to my plan. So like I could have turned down my family, said, hey, no, I gotta eat this meal at this time. I'm not gonna be able to go out on the boat with you today. But you know, I found ways to incorporate it in my life and make sure that I could still get the end result, which I got super lean. I didn't end up getting on stage, but it's one of my proudest moments for sure.
But then was that because of the whole COVID thing?
No, I ended up, my wife, Karen, she's from Mexico. And so we were going to end up leaving the country we had plans to go out of the country, and it just, and so I kind of backed out with my coach, and I still have it on my mind. It's still something that I like, and I like to follow a little bit, but yeah, it was mainly because I just got married within that year as well. So she's from Mexico. She hadn't got to go back and visit her family yet. So.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was awesome though.
John, give me a story or an example where you were just like super persistent, super buoyant even, and flexible.
Yeah. So I have weekly goals or monthly goals, however you want to look at it for business. And so anytime that I've felt like in this, well, since July when I started with you guys, anytime in these last, gosh, 9 months, 10 months, just about, if I feel like I'm not getting the things done that I want to get done, or I feel like I have too much to do and I don't have enough time, my big thing is to get my calendar and be like, okay, here's when I do this, and this, here's my daily checklist. Here's what I know I need to do every day to reach my goals all the time and to reach my 10-year goals, my 20-year goals. And so it's not exactly a specific example, but it is something that I do relatively often. It's just week. We can adjust the calendar because that's really my plan. It's my calendar. That's where everything really is. Mm-hmm. And so every time I do it, it just feels good. And it doesn't even have to be a drastic change, but it just feels good to know like, okay, I'm on a better plan. And maybe this plan isn't going to be great in 2 months, but it's better now. And I know that I'm still on the right path. And so there's a concept of staying on the straight line. So A to B is your goal. You're going to start to veer off. Anytime you start to veer off too far, change something and get yourself back. And then you're going to start to veer the other direction. Change something again. Keep going. And if that's your calendar, great. If that's how often you cook, great. Like it's those little things that you have to be willing to do in order to stay on that straight line and get to your goals as quickly as possible.
Yeah. And which out there is, I think, is really crucial. Is understanding that anytime you start to feel frustration, you start to feel anxiety, you start to feel like you're not where you want to be. Like I love going back to my calendar and saying, okay, like, where am I not following my calendar? Where does my calendar need to be readjusted? And like, I just redid my calendar. Like, I do it every week, but like, I actually did like a heavy reset where I changed a lot of things about 2 weeks ago. And I do that constantly. Every time I start to feel like something's off, I'm like, okay, like, what's my perfect day look like? Like, I think that's the key, is like, what does my perfect day look like? And so there's obviously going to be things that you can control, there's things you can't control. And so ultimately, like, control as many things as you possibly can in your calendar. And the things that you can't control, and when things that you can't control, just means like, maybe you have meetings, maybe you have certain obligations. But outside of that, like, you have more control over your schedule than you like to give yourself credit for, is what I think most people think, that they're like, oh, I have all this other stuff going on. When you actually put it on your calendar, you realize that you just waste a lot of freaking time, like a lot of time. I don't have time. And you're on there watching Facebook or Instagram or whatever, 4 hours a day, right? I don't have time. Yeah, it's because you're on Facebook too much, or you're on Instagram too much, or you're on YouTube too much, or TikTok, or, you know, Instagram, whatever it is, right? It doesn't matter. Tim, what's a good example for you where you got knocked down, got back up, and got better, not better?
So before I say that, I think we're kind of dancing around the core issue here, which is literally the topic that we're talking about today. On the first slide, the first line said, go all in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we are making a decision. So if you know, even if we go back to what that word decision actually means, it comes from the same root of incise, or to cut off, meaning we literally are committing to this wholeheartedly, and we're taking the option of not doing it off the table. So I think being persistent, being buoyant, being flexible, all are subsects of the primary and most important thing, which is commitment, right? Taking that bold commitment to yourself and to your goal. And then that makes everything else much easier. So with that being said, I have many examples, and I'm probably just to another bodybuilding example. So this last year, I guess it was July, it was about a year ago, I started having really bad digestive issues. I was vomiting 20, 30 times a day, literally, not to use gross language, but I was pooping blood. I was having very severe symptoms, fevers, chills. I felt really terrible, like I was going to die. And I ended up going to the emergency room, where they found that my colon had collapsed upon itself. I had a massive blockage, which apparently only happens in infants mostly, because the colon isn't quite developed and they can actually like actually collapse on itself. So they thought I had either colon cancer or, you know, some kind of terrible disorder where they're going to have to do a surgery and actually remove my entire colon. I was going to have to live with a colostomy bag for the rest of my life. But I, you know, at the time I was very, very heartbroken about it, because my goal last year was obviously to put on more muscle and compete again at the national level. And eating is like the number one thing you need to do outside of training to gain size. And I wasn't able, I lost, gosh, like 40 pounds in a month. It was crazy. The weight was just falling off of me. I couldn't keep anything in. So I kept going to other doctors, figuring it out. And I ended up getting diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which was actually a good diagnosis considering what everybody had told me it was. And I had some lacerations, ulcerations, and basically my colon was falling apart. And anytime I would eat something, like say you eat broccoli or an apple or something, it would literally catch on the walls of my colon and cause it to block. And then everything behind it, nothing would go through. So they end up going in, doing surgery, cauterizing all of that, fixing the colon. And then they told me, like, you know, you're gonna take it easy for a little while. You know, it's probably not a wise thing to lift heavy or really put a lot of stress on your digestive system. So I took a month or so to really kind of like suss out the situation, let it heal. And then eventually I got back into training, and I easily could have been like, you know what, this goal is not for me anymore. Like, I don't really want to pursue this anymore. I don't think it's healthy or wise. So I sought advice from that my coach now, who actually is a Crohn's specialist. So he actually works with people with Crohn's, and he's like, no, we can totally do this. Like, we have to do it differently. Hence the adaptability or the flexibility of the plan. And I was able to have, after making my mind up that I still wanted to do this, I was able to actually have my most successful offseason. I'm going to step on stage about 20 pounds heavier this year than the last competition, which in a healthy individual is an awesome year, but someone with Crohn's, that's like even more stellar. Like, that's a really good off season of 20 pounds of actual muscle tissue added in less than 12 months. So that would be a great example of, I could have easily given up, but instead I was married to the goal, not the plan. Mm-hmm. My eating has completely changed since then. My structure of my day, my stress management, my sleep management, everything mattered even more. But I was able to be flexible with that plan. And even to this day, like, I still have to be flexible week to week. If things pop up, I have to adjust. I have to make sure to adjust, or I could end up back into the hospital. So I think that's a pretty good example.
Yeah. it's a perfect example, right? It's perfect. And it's funny, cause like, this is not the topic we're talking about, but ultimately, like, while that might seem like Crohn's might seem like a negative thing, is, you know, I see it, and I know Tim sees it like as a blessing, because now, like, it's probably the thing that's led him to being able to pack on this extra 20 pounds, because he had to eat differently and just like different level of motivation, different, you know, it's just different when you have these, when you have certain limitations, because with limitation actually creates other freedoms as well. And so I think that's really powerful.
Yeah, literally everything had to be like perfect.
Yeah. Like the choice goes away. And like that idea, like burning the boat, like, there is no other choice.
Yeah, there you go. My ships were burned. Yeah. Like, you talk to, I mean, everybody's like, oh, when's my next cheat meal? You don't get one, man. Like, you don't get a cheat meal because you're going to end up in the hospital if you have a cheat meal. So, okay, I no longer crave pizza anymore. I no longer crave ice cream. I have to sleep 8 hours a night, which all those things are very important to progress physically.
You crave to live, and that is what really matters. All right. So a couple of the conscious laws, or the laws of conscious creation that it takes to take bold action, right? The first one, law of harvest. So this is the stage where you actually plant your seeds. So like, if you plant no seeds now, then there'll be no fruit later. Crazy, right? And here's the thing, is that you can expect, oh, you can't. You can't expect to plant the seeds of limiting beliefs and reap the fruit of extraordinary results, okay? So I want to touch on that one first. So I think this one is super important, right? Is like, taking some sort of action right now is what is going to allow you to see you being in that house. Juan, is to you being on that stage. Tim, is to you being a millionaire. John, is like, well, like, what you do today, like the seeds you plant today are what's going to allow those things come to fruition in the future, right? Like, you don't get to be a millionaire today. You don't get to have a house today. You don't get to be on the stage today, but the things you do today, that's what's going to lead you to being in those places in the future. And the further we get away from a culture who like grows our own food and who like takes and like actually like grows things, we fail to realize that, like, if you literally just don't plant the seed, like, why would you expect, how would you expect to be able to bear the fruit later? Like, if you're not showing up and you're not putting yourself in position to own a home with, you got to have credit, you got to have cash, you got to have, you know, like, you got to have all these little things. Like, if you don't have any of those things, like, why would you expect to own a home, right? If you're not doing the things where you're not tracking your finances, where you're not making any money, right? Measure your net worth.
Practicing investing.
Yeah. How would you ever expect to be a millionaire, right? If you're not practicing your posing, right? If you're not staying to your plan, if you're not training more, how would you expect to show up at a national level bodybuilding show? And like, that's what we talk about when it's planting your seeds. Like, you must plant those seeds today in order for you to bear the fruit later, right? So that's the law of harvest. And before I talk about the law of intuition, let's touch on that a little bit. So Juan, tell me, what is your interpretation of when you see the law of harvest? And yeah, what's your
interpretation? Yeah, no, you know, I mean, I definitely agree with all those like physical things, like, you know, your action should be in line with what you're looking to achieve. So like, your action should be reflections of the fruit that you're trying to harvest, essentially. But I like to go in a little bit different direction. Something that that is really on my mind when I hear this is mentally. And so mentally or emotionally, when I'm trying to achieve a positive outcome, but I'm driven by a negative force, like a scarcity mindset, like that I have to buy this house because I don't have enough money. I don't have enough worth to my name or whatever it is, like these negative drivers that are going to get me to where I'm going to, where I want to be. Like they might get me so far, but ultimately I've found that if I slip into that and have some sort of a negative driver pushing me towards my goal, it's not fulfilling. I don't enjoy the process and I end up getting crushed. And so when I'm thinking about my goal and something positive, well, the state that I am in when I'm taking action towards that goal is going to make achieving that goal more possible. If I view it as a positive outcome, then I shouldn't wait until the outcome to experience that positivity. Again, the seed should reflect the fruit. So positive outcome needs to be done in a positive state. So that means, finding ways to enjoy what I'm doing and enjoy the whole process mentally and emotionally.
Yeah. And I think the second half of that, and the second half of this is that, like, if you don't think you could ever buy a house, like, are you ever going to buy a house?
Right. No.
Right. It's because, like, and then we're trained to, like, our beliefs, we start to find evidence of those beliefs in our world, right? So, like, oh, like, well, I can't buy a house because XYZ. I can't lose weight because XYZ, right? And so if you have this belief that you can't do something, I can't be a millionaire, I can't be a national level competitor, like you will find evidence of that true to become true, right? And so again, you can't expect to plant the seeds of limiting beliefs and then expect to get the thing that you actually want. Tim, what's your thoughts on this?
So I actually really love the analogy of planting seeds. Because I think it makes really good sense. Like if you plant, let's say you plant alfalfa seeds, you're not going to expect to harvest apples, mm-hmm. right? Like it all makes sense, right? You have to plant the seed, you have to work the ground, you have to water it, you have to nurture it, you have to be attentive to the seed that you planted for you ultimately to get the whatever harvest that you're after. So I think that makes really good sense. But I think we're talking about bold action. We're talking about making that commitment. One of my favorite ways, and you guys probably all agree, is to put my money where my mouth is, right? So we tend to vote for what we care about with our dollars, right? So one of the first things that I do, and I'm not going to use bodybuilding as another example, but I competed in a Tough Mudder about 7-8 years ago, and I'm not an endurance athlete, like admittedly, I don't train for that, but I had a bunch of clients that wanted to do something. And they're like, we'll do this if our coach does it with us. And I was like, oh crap. Okay. So looks like I'm committed. So I literally paid for it that same day. And it was like $700. It was not a cheap event, but I put my money down. And then wouldn't you know, I started doing my dang cardio. I started training like an athlete. I started doing some Ninja Warriors type stuff. Mostly because I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of my clients and not be able to do stuff because I was like their leader. But when I put my money down, it became really freaking real. Like this is going to happen because, and this is human psychology, you pay for something and the more you pay for something, the more you're going to pay attention to that dang thing. So the $700 was enough to sting my wallet a little bit. So I took that training very seriously. And honestly, like the Tough Mudder was one of the most fun events I've ever done. But if I would have went into it without like working for it at all, like if it was like, we'll pay for you, we'll cover your cost if you do it with us, which would have been awesome. I wouldn't have taken it very seriously. I probably wouldn't have been ready. And I probably would have been dying because it was like a 12-mile run up North Star, which is in Tahoe. It's like a big, like 12,000 foot peak with like all these like Navy SEAL type obstacles along the way. But the main limiting factor is, can you run 12 miles? Because if you can't run 12 miles, like everything's going to suck. Everything's going to hurt. You're not going to enjoy the experience. So I was having a great time because I was in shape, but only because I put my money where my mouth was and actually took that training seriously. And I do the same thing. Every time I want to commit to something, I pay for it. Like I paid for my show in Chattanooga, the one that's coming up in 7 weeks. I paid for that 13 weeks ago. As soon as they let you pay for it, I paid for it. And that's because now, guess what? Tim can't get out of it. He can't use excuses. He can't use this, that, and the other, or he's saying goodbye to his entire deposit. Yep. So I would encourage anybody who's listening to this, like if you have a serious goal, commit to it and put your dang money where your mouth is. Like actually commit to it financially because we follow what we pay for.
Yeah. Money creates commitment. Yeah. One of the things I write down every single day, and I'm a huge believer in that, is like, you want to commit to something, put your money where it is, put your attention where it is, put your time where it is. And then all of a sudden your priorities all of a sudden start to go where your money goes and where your attention goes. Right. John. Thoughts.
I'm gonna keep on with Tim's here. So if you were to spend money on the Tough Mudder or sign up for it and then you never did it, that's the exact equivalent of buying your seeds but never actually planting. Mm-hmm. And like, how likely are you if you're a farmer, nice, if you go like you go buy your seeds and then you just let them sit in your store shed and let them rot, like how likely is that actually to happen? So that's why it's so powerful to spend money on it, because you're actually buying the seeds that you need to plant in the first place. Then it's about taking the action after that. Or you could argue that buying them is a bold action too. But regardless, I totally agree that until you have some sort of focus, like you're going to come up with some sort of excuse not to do it. So don't leave your seeds in the tool shed, spend money on them, use them, and you're going to get to where you want. You're going to get the fruit that you want to get.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a great analogy, John. I love that. And then the last law is the law of intuition, right? And we're talking about taking this bold action towards your goal. I think, and Juan talked about it earlier, it's like a lot of times people, they just don't know what to do, or they don't feel like because they don't know what to do, then they don't do anything, which inherently means that they're procrastinating, which means that they have absolutely zero opportunity in order for them to actually hit their goal, because they're doing exactly what they did in order to get to where they are. And obviously the definition of insanity is like doing exactly the same thing over and over again, and then somehow expecting that life's just going to change by wishing it or hoping it, right? It doesn't change unless you take some bold action. And so the last law is the law of intuition. And so you're going to be constantly faced with making decisions. And so using your intuition to make those decisions, trusting that fully whatever decision you make is the right one to move you closer to your goal in that moment, right? So this one really encompasses everything we talked about, is that like, the decision you make in that moment, making a decision in that moment is the right decision. Even if it turns out to be maybe the thing that took you a little off plan, off track, it ultimately still moved you closer to your goal, because by making that decision, you took a step forward. By making no decision, you stay right where you're at, or potentially moving yourself backwards. And so, John, I'll let you kind of continue to roll on here with this one. But where do you see the decision-making process in the aspect of like taking bold action? Like, where do you see the ultimate bottlenecks that most people face with making decisions?
The ultimate what?
Bottlenecks that people they face when deciding that they need to take some sort of action, but they're not quite sure.
A lot of times we overthink it. Something that I've done had done for many years in my life of like, okay, you know, I can apply for this job, or I can apply for this job, or I can accept this job. Like, but what if it's the wrong choice? And then we just get afraid of like making a wrong decision. And that's where,
what about
just like you said, training? You got to get,
what about in sales training?
What's that?
What about like when we do,
well, yeah, in sales training, like, oh, what do I say? What do I say? Like, I overthink what I say, and I'm still doing that now. Today was a better day. But the whole point was, I just had to say something. Mm-hmm. You just have to do something. And because like you said, Logan, if you don't, you're going to move back. I'm going to say, like, you're not going to stay where you are. You're going to move backwards, because if you're not moving forwards, you are moving backwards, period. And so that's the biggest part that I see in people, is like, what if it's a bad choice? So what? So what if it's the wrong choice? It's not the wrong choice if you made it. And another example for me, I struggled with going to class when I was in college. I would get like really anxious about it. Like, I know I should go, but I don't want to. And so even though the decision was super clear for me, I still had this debate in my head of like, what's actually better. And so that's where I needed to just like, I had my intuition. My intuition was screaming at me just to go, but I still didn't trust it. And I've come a long way since then. But the point is, like, having that intuition screaming at you and still not being able to trust it is another thing that decision paralysis. Even when I was writing workouts for the class for the first time, I was like, I don't know what exercises to use. And now I'm just like, oh, this works. Like, just need to go for it. And like you said, Logan, if it's the wrong decision, or if it's not the best one, you're finding the best one by making that decision. Therefore, you have the freedom to change it. And that's where it goes. You go back to your plans being made in sand, which give yourself the freedom to make a decision and then commit to a completely different decision. That's okay. You have to do that.
Awesome. It's funny you say that, because I can remember I remember sitting at the Ridge, this was 10 years ago, sitting at like, they had like these little tables that people that we used to do our consultations with prospective clients. And they had like these little white, little small little papers that we would like write like notes on or workouts on, things like that. And I remember sitting there my very first time, like writing a workout for a client. I remember sitting there for, I don't remember how long. It was so long. Hour and a half. I just remember like writing some workouts, some exercises on a piece of paper. I was like, I just don't know what I'm doing. I went to one of the trainers and I was like, hey, like, how do you write workouts for your clients? Like, give me something to go off of. And she's like, I just make it up as I go. And I was like, oh, perfect. Thanks for the help. But yeah. I was like, I just remember like being in that moment that I had no idea what to write down. And so funny, it's like, just something would have been better than nothing. And like, although like I joked about that, like I heard like not seem professional, like it was better than what I had, which was nothing, you know? Juan, a lot of intuition when making these decisions towards action towards your goals. So kind of summarize kind of what you talked about earlier about using that law of intuition to just to do something.
Right. Yeah. And so I think the big thing is admitting that making a decision and taking action is going to be more beneficial than not making a decision and not taking action. Like knowing that, you know that you got to make a decision and that you got to take action to get closer to your goal. But part of that process for me is really asking myself, like literally asking myself, sometimes it's out loud, sometimes it's in my head, what do I need to do? And then trusting that first thing that comes to me is the direction that I need to go in. And then John said something to me that stood out. He said something about, so what if it's a bad decision? And then he looped it back around and finished by saying that there really is no bad decision because you found out that wasn't exactly the way you're going to get there, but now you know. So that narrows down the different avenues that you need to try until you reach your goal. And so like for me, that's the beginning process, but I also had to do some more work on the front end as well and redefine what I considered failure. And we talked about learning the right lessons. So ultimately, I had to eliminate failure from my vocabulary, because something that we always talk about is failure only exists if you didn't learn anything or if you give up, right? And so really, I eliminated failure from my vocabulary. And something I picked up from being around you guys is like just every outcome serves to my benefit, right? Mm-hmm. Every outcome I can use to get closer to my goal, as long as I focus on the positive aspect of it. And so that's kind of the process, just ask myself, trust myself, and then of course taking action, and then whatever outcome comes, like using that to even as a stepping stone rather than something that's going to bring me down and make me feel disappointed like I didn't achieve what I set out to do.
Yeah, everything goes my way, man, right? Where on the wrist, right? Everything goes my way. I think that's important. And the thing you said in there, dude, failure is a choice. That's it. Failure is a choice, right? You only fail if you stop. That's the choice that you make. So love that, Juan, love that. All right, Tim, bring it home, my friend. Bring it home.
So the best thing we can do is make the right decision. The second best thing we can do is make the wrong decision. The worst thing we can do is make no decision. Mm-hmm. What I guess I'm getting at here is that and what we really work to achieve with every single one of our clients, as well as ourselves, is the power is not in the decision. The power is in trusting yourself to make that decision, right? Like if we look at people like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates, or even was the guy from Apple, Steve Jobs. They spend a lot of effort and energy removing decisions from their day, because we run into what's called decision fatigue, where we're making a lot of trivial decisions. And when the time comes to make a big important decision, we have less marbles, so to speak, to make that decision, right? So one of the things that Warren Buffett would do, and he's like one of my favorite characters, just because he's really cool. He might be a little on the spectrum, but he's amazing. Is he literally, based off of what the stock did for Berkshire Hathaway, dictated what breakfast he would have in the morning. If it went, and he always went to McDonald's because, well, he owns McDonald's. But if the stock went up, he would have option one from the menu. If the stock went down, he would have option two. The guy's a multi billionaire. He has money to buy whatever, the whole menu in every single restaurant. But the thing was, he didn't want to think about it. He didn't want to think about it because he understood the importance of having the ability and the energy to make decisions. And that was the same with Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs always wore that black turtleneck. As goofy as it looked, it was because he didn't want to take the time and energy to make a decision on what to wear in the morning. And it's a very common trait amongst very successful people. And what I'm getting at is they understand the power in the ability to make the decision. And as smart as Warren Buffett is, as smart as Steve Jobs is, or was, as smart as Bill Gates is, as smart as Alex Hormozi is, they all make bad decisions sometimes. They really do. They all make poor decisions, but they trust their ability to make decisions. They make decisions quickly and decisively. And if it's the wrong decision, they course correct and they make a different one, right? But if you make no decision, it's very similar to not tracking your food. What the hell do you change? You have no idea because you didn't make a decision.
Yeah, I think about decisions, the way you just said right there, I think about decisions the way I think about shooting baskets, right? And everyone talks about how many shots Michael Jordan made, how many game winners he made, but no one talks about all the shots that he missed, right? Or Kobe Bryant, they talk about all the game winners he made, or LeBron, all the game winners, but they don't talk about all the shots that he missed as well, right? And think of that like decisions. Like, everyone talks about the good decisions you make, and no one knows about all the bad decisions you make. So you just got to keep making decisions, because ultimately the one right decision, it gets rid of all those other what would be considered bad decisions or decisions that didn't quite go your way, right? And so every time you make a decision, you get an opportunity to shoot a basket. And every single time you shoot a basket, you get a chance to win. Every time that you don't make a decision is a time that you held onto the ball, right? And can you score a basket if you held onto the ball?
No.
Absolutely not. Chance. You have literally zero chance. And so that's exactly what making a decision is. So hopefully that analogy really made sense to you. And so if you want to go out there and you want to start taking bold action towards your goal, take your shot, make that decision, right? Take that step forward. No matter how big the step, no matter how uncomfortable it is, like, take the bold action, again, the keyword action, move towards your goal. And as long as you're moving towards your goal and you decide that you have control of your life, which means that failure is a choice and it is not something that happens to you. It happens because you made that decision. Then you literally, it just becomes a matter of when you hit your goal, not a matter of if. And that's the message I want to leave you with today. So appreciate you for listening. Appreciate Juan, John, and Tim for being on here today, sharing your insights, sharing your knowledge. And we'll be back next week. We'll be episode 16. We'll talk about step number 3 in this process to manifesting any goal that you desire. So happy Wednesday, and we'll be back next week. All right. Bye, guys.
Well, next time.
Yeah, later.